Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, March 6, 2010. I'm Sam Minter. I have Yvonne Bo with me as my phone rings in the background.
Ring, ring. Hello.
I hadn't planned to mention this, but you know, my phone is ringing in the background because I'm testing one of these cockamamie stock schemes at the moment. So I have it paging me when it does stuff.
But the stock scheme, but it's Sunday.
Here's the thing. Like the little thing I have set up has no idea about when the market's open, when it's closed. It rang to tell me to, sell Bank of America. Yeah. I don't know.
No, the Asian markets aren't open either.
I set some stuff up. I've got these little automated things going on. Today is like the first day it actually is fully loaded with data, like to make reasonable predictions. Like before that, it was dealing with half data because I had just started it up. But the preliminary indications so far of when it had sort of partial data, not good. Yeah, it wasn't. Okay, well, it wasn't doing a good job. But
let me put it this way: it went. Hopefully, when you hit upon a winner, okay,
give me a call.
Let me know because I've got some capital to put. You see, here's the thing: when we tried these cockamamie schemes before, the transaction cost would kill us.
Yes,
it used to be to do any stock trade, it would cost $100 to buy, $100 to sell.
But now it's like $7.
By the time you exactly. Now it's like, you know, we could do it for ridiculous amounts. I could even get for some free stock trades. So if you take out the transaction costs, it was actually even more expensive because that was $100 for just – that was like $100 for 100 shares. Once you started adding more shares, it became quite pricey. So anyway, all right. So, okay, let me know.
I'll let you know if anything like actually like works out. But, you know, so far – it's picked losers more than it's picked winners, but you know, whatever.
Well,
you know,
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Okay.
You know, there are lots of things I can tweak.
Yeah. Listen, let me tell you something. Hedge funds, while they've been making a killing, is by having guys like you run cockamamie schemes like this for the last 10 years. Okay, so why not us?
There you go.
So you
wanted to start out the show. We're going to talk about the iPad. We're going to talk about Libya. We had some feedback. We're going to talk about this little thing that happened at Northwestern University. But you wanted to start out with a story which I have not seen, so I have no idea what you're talking about. About
the headline is discovered the happiest man in America. Okay, and I'm like, what? Okay, so. Here's the deal. Gallup has for years been calling about 1,000 randomly selected American adults and apparently tried to do it in about each congressional district to come up with a demographic, and they've come up with tons of information of where people are happiest, sad, sicker, better, etc., whatever. At some point, it's an incredible amount of information on people, on how people felt. Okay. So, the New York Times called Gallup to come up with the statistical composite of what the happiest person in America would be, based on the characteristics that would correlate to that. Okay, so here's the answer according to this Gallup's answer: he's tall. Number one,
okay.
Asian American.
I guess you're out.
No, I'm out. Observant Jew. Okay,
I'm out.
He's at least 65. Okay, married.
Okay,
has children. Lives in Hawaii, so we're all out.
Yeah.
Okay, runs his own business and has household income of more than $120,000 a year. But this is what the New York Times did after that. They went and they said, Let's find this guy. That's right. So, lo and behold, meet Alvin Wong. He is 5'10", 69 years old, Chinese-American, kosher-observing Jew, who's married with children and lives in Honolulu. He runs his own healthcare management business and earns more than $120,000 a year. And, you know, they called him up.
And they asked him if he was happy?
Yeah, they reached by phone at his home on Friday. Mr. Wong said that he was indeed a very happy person. He said that perhaps manages to be the happiest man in America because my life philosophy is, if you can't laugh at yourself, life is going to be pretty terrible for you. Then he continued, this is a practical joke, right? So that was – so. And they got a picture of Mr. Wong with his wife By the way, looking quite happy, mind you. Okay.
Of course.
You know, there. So, look at that. I mean, they actually managed to, you know, it's like, I mean, well, look at the combination of characteristics. I mean, how many people, okay, tall Asian American. So, therefore, narrows down your field right there. Chinese American and a kosher observing Jew Chinese American.
Yep.
Who, you know, yeah. So basically, that guy doesn't exist.
I could see that. I could see that combination of things leading to some degree of happiness.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, he's in Hawaii. Actually, according to the chart, one of the happiest states, definitely in the things in happiness state, was Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So that came up. Basically, he's got his own business, so therefore he doesn't have a boss busting his chops, so that you know, proved his happiness level. He is making a lot of money at his own business, in which he doesn't have a boss busting his chops, so therefore, there you go, keep piling it up. You know, he's married, he's got kids, he's, you know, he's looks like he's got a wonderful wife, you know, everything. I mean, it's just, it's
I would consider a trade.
Yeah. Sure, I like that. I mean, what the hell? So, therefore, the happiest man in America, discovered through a statistical composite of Gallup. I just thought that the, you know, quite interesting combination of demographics that come into play on that. You know, it's kind of also funny. It said over here that, you know, they also have a whole bunch of charts on happiness and sadness. Okay, you know, so basically men are happier than women. That's one thing. I'm like, you know. But here's the thing. You know, we keep saying about, you know, everybody's married, complain, marriage sucks. Well, who was saddest? Separated, 35%. Married was on the low end of that, 14%. The happiest people who smiled the most in one day were either domestic partner or married. Okay, right. So therefore that debunks that theory. And but here's the other funny thing: Hispanic happiest 85%. Okay, they were at the top, but at the same time, saddest. How many? Because the question is, who smiled the most? Percentage who said they laughed or smiled a lot during the previous day? Hispanic 85%. Who was saddest? Percentage who said they felt sadness a lot during the previous day? Hispanic 23%. So therefore.
Therefore, you're sad, but you're smiling anyway.
Exactly. Okay, so therefore, so there you go. So that was, so I thought that was a cute little news story that they had. So
I like that. Yeah. Okay, I wanted to really briefly do our feedback, a really short one. Once again, from our friend Matt, responding to, I guess, a couple of shows ago when I talked about you know, wanting to, you know, lose a little weight and get a little fitter and blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned one of the things that I had tried last year, when I was actually, you know, succeeding, was, you know, I would eat only when somebody else suggested it.
Correct.
Like, if I felt hungry, I was like, I will wait. But if somebody else said, it's time for dinner or let's go eat, I'm like, I'm all on it. Let's go.
Okay.
And also, you know, I had an exemption for free food as well. So his response is, so let me get you this straight. The way to beat you at a weight loss contest is to constantly remind you to eat or lay snacks out on a meeting room table.
Yes, apparently so. Which you just got to send you emails. Hey, Sam, let's go eat.
Exactly. So I will say, yeah, look, last week, after we did that show, I was like, okay, it's time. I'm going to reform. I'm going to stop, you know, the white chocolate mochas. I'm going to stop I'm going to get back on the wagon. I think is the way you put it.
Yes.
You know, and so I was walking every day at lunch. I was taking a half hour at lunch and just walking around the neighborhood, near my work. You know, I was trying to do the only eat when spoken to kind of thing. But you know, I was taking every possible excuse. Like if somebody mentioned they were going to go eat, oh, okay, let's, you know, whether or not they were inviting me, you know, they were just like,
let's grab something,
you know? Okay. And then I had hit a couple of, I had a night where I did not sleep very much. Between like I was starting to not feel very well. For anybody who can't tell, I'm like I'm sick again. You know, once again, Sam is sick. You know, when you have like you know, two people in school, plus a baby. You
yeah,
know,
yeah, it, I thing, know.
Things
I
go
know.
Around a lot.
They bring everything, I know.
Anyway, so, you know, I got there, I had to get there early in the morning, and I'm like, oh, I need something. And so, like, you know, and then I was like, no lunch? Fuck this, I'm going to have lunch, you know? So, and so... It completely no luck the last couple weeks. I'll start again maybe once I feel better. Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, typically another good weight loss strategy is to be sick. So we'll see how this works out for me.
Well, I will not recommend it. Let's just put it to you that way. Okay, how's that?
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll try again. I mean, I think, you know, it's obvious in my case, like it's not like unclear, like what I need to do. You cut out like the mega calories from, you know, the biggest thing for me was always the drinks. Yeah. More so than anything I ate, it was the high calorie drinks. I just need to cut those out and exercise more. Cause like my exercise routine is completely pitiful. So, yeah, that's what I need to do. But, yes, the way to beat me at any such possible actions is just to constantly lay out snacks in front of me. Like, if you put them in a little line, I'll be, like, following down the road, you know? So.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, therefore, we know how to get Sam fat and beat him at a weight loss contest. So I don't know. I think it's time to take a break so we can later on talk about the iPad, I guess.
Exactly. iPad and Libya coming up next. We'll be back after this. Dive yourself with Blue Protection. La 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 la. Take the time for vaccination. La 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 la. Take action every day to help you. La 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 la. Take antivirals if doc says to.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
And we are here. So what do you want to do first, Yvonne, iPad or Libya?
iPad.
Okay. Yeah. iPad 2 came out as expected. I did put out our show after it was announced so you could laugh at the various predictions that did not come true. We didn't make too many. Yvonne thought there'd be a non-glossy screen. He was wrong.
And I was totally wrong.
You know, and I don't think I predicted all that much, but things were very much in line with what the rumor mill had been saying right before the launch. People a couple months ago had squelched the idea of a Retina display this time around. I think that might be in place for the next iPad, which some people think might be able to happen in less than a year, but that's speculation. But basically, it's faster, it's lighter, it's thinner, it's got cameras, and yes. That's it.
I think that you hit it right on the head. I mean, those are the things. I mean, it's an evolution of it, certainly. I mean, it's quite, you know, improved certain technical aspects of it. But I mean, it's certainly not a revolution in terms of the product. That's for darn sure. I mean, you know, it just makes it certainly far more. It makes it, you know, some of the things that you could have thought that maybe competitive wise it would have been, you know, with the newer ones with faster processors and this and that and whatever. It basically, you know, got those concerns on the cameras. It got rid of all of those in one fell swoop. You know, so. I don't know. Did you see this thing about the smart covers?
Oh yeah, they have the smart covers too. That got a lot of press. So for anyone who hasn't seen the videos, it's a cover that attaches magnetically to the front, so it only covers the screen, not the back, because the back is aluminum, so it doesn't really need a cover. And it sort of folds up off the screen, and it's like the screen is sensitive to it or whatever, so like it'll sleep or wake when you open or close the cover, right. And it'll sort of roll up into a stand that right. you can use to put it either sort of in a typing orientation or by flipping it a different way into an orientation to sit there and watch movies or whatever.
Okay. In a little bit of self-promotion here, I guess I hadn't talked about this. I am a minority party in a self-promotion in a company that I didn't pick the name, but it was catchy, a company called Mountain Meat. Okay, all right.
Okay.
Which does not mean fuck me. Okay, really.
We
have
sure
a product that was just launched that is called the Freedom, which actually just launched like recently, a couple of weeks ago, which basically is a it's a stand for the iPad. Well, it works more in a couple of ways. It allows you to mount it, say, as a rear seat video system. It allows you to mount it behind seats in a plane. It allows you to mount the iPad on a wall, for example, for you to be if you want it as an appliance to use on a wall. It definitely adds some additional functionality. It's so we just launched a product about a week and a half ago, and hopefully we'll have bigger mass distribution in the next couple of months. I don't know. But if you guys are interested, there you go. That's one of the things, business ventures I started with. A friend of mine is the guy who really came up with the whole damn idea. He just actually said, "Hey, what do you think? You gonna put some money in it?" And I'm like, okay, fine. You talked me into it. Okay.
So I'm looking at your website right now. At least I presume it's mount-me.com.
Yes.
So. There's some pictures here. There's a little stand, $49.99.
Multiple
colors.
Yep.
Very interesting. Are you using one of these yourself?
I have not yet received one. We just launched it a couple of weeks ago, and I have been a little bit like slow in getting. I've just seen the pictures that are prototypes, and not gotten one for myself yet. My partner's got some. I'm sure I'll have one pretty soon, but I just haven't got my hands on it yet. So, it's just because we just launched a press release about a week ago, but...
Oh, and so this isn't like your standard case or just mount that you carry around and put it on a table. It looks like it's for permanent, like semi-permanent mounting, right?
Yes, you can have it. Yeah, you can have it in certain instances.
Like screws on and stuff.
Yes. So, say, for example, you want to have an iPad, say, as an appliance somewhere on a wall, whatever, for people to check in and whatever, you can go. It allows you to mount it there. If you want to have it, say, in the backseat of a car, it's another option, so you don't want to use it for video, your kids and whatever, it allows you to mount it there. It also has some portability features, so you can put it, say, on an airplane. It's got a mount, so you can put it in the backseat of a plane. We've already tried that. It works pretty well. So, it's a couple of cool options. So there you go.
Okay,
I got my plug-in.
You got your plug-in. So yes. Back to the iPad 2. What do you feel in terms of this? In terms of is this going to be a huge another wave of people buying these things, or is this just going to?
Well, I think that there's going to be a huge wave of people buying them regardless. Okay.
All right. Well, here's my question: Is this a big bump because of this, or are there like lots of people holding out and waiting for the two?
What it does, it just keeps it competitive against the onslaught of new tablets that are coming out. I think that's the key. Okay.
Well, and I'll tell you, I've said before on here that I didn't want the first generation, but come the second generation, I would really want one.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I was a little bit. When I watched the demo, I'm like, this is cool. And I kind of still want one, but I'm not getting an overwhelming, like, oh God, I must have this type vibe. Now, honestly, I'd still have to convince the wife anyway. But anyway, because it is a significant chunk of change. I'm not getting the, from the new. Yes, it's nicer, it's newer, but it's not like it's suddenly, feeling like, oh my God, I have to have this now.
We didn't jump on these from the beginning, you and I? I don't think we're just like the core audience for this thing. I mean, although I will say this, now that we have ours at home, I'd be like, fuck, I mean, you fucking take it away from me, I'll fucking kill you.
Okay? Are you going to get one for yourself now that the two's out?
I don't want to spend the money right now.
Okay.
I mean, we've got one, and I get to use it all the time, and I'm just like, we've got, we've got a desktop Mac. We have a PowerBook. We have an iPad. I have a work laptop. I mean, we're two people, for God's sakes. I mean, Jeez, we have two iPhones.
But what will the dog use?
Brownie, what are you going to use? I don't think he really cares.
Okay.
Based on his current reaction right now. I think he'd like a treat or a yogurt right now, actually, if you ask him right now.
Anyway, I don't know. I still conceptually want one. But like I remember when the iPhone went to the second iPhone, the iPhone 3G. At that point, I was like, "Oh my God, I've waited so long for the iPhone. I didn't get the first generation. Now the second generation has all these things that the first generation should have had in the first place, and it's like, you know, it's really kick ass. It's I can't wait any longer.
We both did not jump on the first iPhone, even though we loved it. I mean, let's face it. We were the same way.
I think in general, like, yeah, I've had the pattern. Well, not always, but recently, I've had the pattern of getting the even numbered updates. You know, mm-hmm. sort of, I got the second and fourth iPhone.
Right.
You know, and I guess that's the only example, so it's not really a pattern. But, you know, whatever. You know, and so I was thinking, you know, I'll get the second iPad. And I remember when I got the second iPhone, I felt, I was like jumping at my, you know, I was like, I can't wait any longer. I need one. And I just don't quite feel that way for the iPad. I mean, I want one.
Well, maybe
one,
you just got an iPhone 4, and it's like, you know, I mean, it's like a little bit like, yeah, I mean, you just killed your device craving. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, we just got an iPad, and I'm like, you know, I don't know. I've got a guy at the office who, I mean, gosh, he buys everything that comes out. I'm not like that. I mean, okay, so he had an iPhone 4. I just saw him the other day, and he had a. He got a Droid, one of the brand new ones, and he got an iPad, and he got this, and I'm like, no, I just can't, I'm just not me. I've got a new device, we're enjoying it right now. I'm like, I don't feel the need that we have for another device at this moment. Even like I'll tell you something, I went yesterday to the Apple store, and I thought that I had, I've bought AppleCare for everything I have, and apparently I was remiss and did not buy it for my 3GS. Okay. And the mute button is not working on my 3GS.
Yep.
So I went and I went to get it fixed, and they told me when they pulled up the warranty information that I was out of warranty and I did not have AppleCare. And I went through my receipts and I realized that yeah, I bought AppleCare for my wife's 3G and I bought AppleCare for the iPad, but I did not get AppleCare for my phone. So I almost went and said, well, screw it. I'll buy an iPhone 4. I've been holding out. And I went and I said, no, why? I can go into the menu and I can freaking mute the damn phone. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm just, even though I had one of them in my hand and I loved it, I said, screw it. No, I there's still more useful life in this. And I guess it's just it. I'm just, you know, I've got a device that works. It provides a lot of the functionality. Why the hell am I going to just, you know, chuck it away for a new one? We're just too disposable, I think, sometimes as society in general, just to jump to the new thing. And I'm just trying to avoid that, I guess.
Since you mentioned that, I think I should update on my GPS issue I had as well.
Yes.
The little software fix I did didn't really work.
Didn't.
Like it seemed like there was a short-term improvement, but it might have just been luck, because it certainly didn't fix the issue. And it seems to be intermittent, because like I did several experiments where I took my phone and one of the other two phones in the family while we were driving and had them both have like navigation apps up, and the other phone did it perfectly, exactly how you would expect. Mine did it perfectly about 25% of the time, and then the other 75% of the time was just jumping all over the place. So
just call, you know what,
yeah, I but the thing is I have
an online, you know what,
I haven't yet done the backup they told me to, so I'm gonna do
okay. I'm
gonna do the restore that they told me to and see if it fixes it. Basically the procedure here is do a complete wipe of my phone, make it a new phone, go out and try the damn navigation thing, see if I still have the same problem, and then I can still restore all my shit. But do a test with sort of a clean phone, and that should satisfy them. And if that's still not working right, then take it back in and make them give me a new one. But
give you a new phone.
You know, the thing is, I just haven't. I know I need to do this, but I know it's going to take me like several hours of futzing with the phone.
Yeah, I know.
And so, like,
I know, it's a pain in the neck because I had to do that myself, and it is a pain in the neck.
I haven't done it yet, and I've been sick, and I haven't felt like doing jack. I mean, I was sick enough. I was home a couple days last week, and like, and yesterday, like Saturday, I was like basically immobile all day. I'm feeling slightly better today on Sunday, but still like crap. So I'm like, do I really want to sit at my desk and do this for the next 3 hours? Probably not.
Yeah, I know. Probably not. Yep, I hear you.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back, and we'll talk about, I guess, primarily Libya. There's still some things going on in some other countries, too, but Libya is the one that's really exploding right now. So we'll be back after this. Oh, it'll be your poem. Enjoy the poem of the week.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
We've Come for Your Galoshes, by Paul Siegel. Going bowling with a roll of toilet paper, there's a no smoking sign on my book of matches. Last year at the folk fest, Luke said, a funny thing to say to someone on acid. He pointed to the ground and then, get out of the fire ants! Up ahead, a guy who inadvertently spit on his dick while seducing the urinal waiting for piss. Earlier, someone said, blood, Lincoln lost lots shaving at a Chevron station. Chemlab scavenger hunt, gutter ball and then a spare. Wondering what's to pick inside my nose. Smells like someone had asparagus, then peed all over the place.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
I just thought I'd share my lovely cough with you.
Woohoo!
Yeah, exactly. Libya. You know, here's the thing. Like, all of these other countries that have had things going on, you know, have had a dynamic that's basically been, okay, there are protesters occupying the square. Will the military come in and do anything? Will the government decide to give up? You know, all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Libya, right. There's an entirely different dynamic here. There's a war going on. You know,
pretty much.
There's like rebels. There's the government. There's like controlling major parts of the country. You know, so the rebels took over parts of the country in certain cities, and then the government is fighting back and trying to retake those cities. This is an entirely different kind of thing.
Yes, this is flat out war. You know, and everybody keeps saying, "Well, the U.S. is staying on the sidelines," and I'm like, what the fuck are we supposed to do? Get in the middle of a civil war now, too? I mean, we've already been in two frickin' wars. We're gonna invade a third fucking Middle Eastern country now? Really? That's the plan? I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing these people talking, and I'm like, I'm not sure what the hell they're thinking.
Excuse me. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's
yeah, well, look, I mean, luckily, you get a few people mouthing off, but nobody who's actually in control of anything is, like, advocating that. I mean, you had Secretary Gates, who's the defense secretary right now, who is the last defense secretary under Bush, and Obama kept him on, you know, gave a speech recently in the last couple of weeks where he said, you know, any U.S. defense secretary who advocates to his president that we go into that we engage in an armed war in a Mideast country needs to have his head examined. I forget the exact words, but it was that gist. You know, basically saying, look, you know, this is crazy.
We are taxed. Our military has been taxed and spent. Okay, right now over the last 10 years. I mean, pretending that we have enough, really, you know. Our military has enough stomach to go and fucking invade another Middle Eastern country. Hey, they're out of their fucking minds.
I say, with the military occupied the way it is, now's the time for the Canadian surprise attack.
Yes, of course. I've been expecting that at any moment, but, you know. But they have sort of shocked me and have not done it yet. But, you know, anyway, it's just, I mean, we can't put that burden on our military. It's just too much. It's too much.
Well, I mean, and people, so, specifically the thing that people have been talking the most about recently is no-fly zones. And can we set up a no-fly zone to basically stop the Libyan Air Force from using its planes against
I think it'd be in, well, I think it'd be impractical to do it by ourselves.
Here's the things that were pointed out. One, Libya is a freaking large country. It would be one of the largest no-fly zones ever done. Second, if you look at the effectiveness of previous no-fly zones, like even the famous Iraqi no-fly zone that lasted for like 15 years or however long it lasted between Gulf War I and Gulf War II.
It wasn't all that, you know.
Well, you know, Saddam didn't fly very much, and so we achieved that. But we did shoot down a few innocents.
Well, he didn't have much to fly in.
Well, yeah, I read a couple things basically saying that, you know, the only actual shoot downs of the Iraqi no fly zone were a couple times where we accidentally shot down our own planes. You know, so
that's very helpful. Oh, whoops! Oh, was that you? Oh, I'm sorry, Chase. I thought it was somebody else. You know? Oh, God.
And not to
Sam
mention,
is dying.
Not to mention that this would be an absolutely massive endeavor. You'd have to either bring in, you know, carriers to support this, which are kind
of
occupied elsewhere, or you'd have to base
like
it,
four or five carriers,
or you'd have to base things out of Europe with a fairly long round trip, and so lots and lots of planes required to do anything,
refueling tankers
and also
we're talking billions of dollars to do this fucking thing,
and also the whole thing again, you end up. What you're doing is, I mean, and yes, this is probably a situation where you could get UN support and you'd get a wide range of people, although I'm guessing like China and Russia might veto any attempts, but, you know, but nevertheless, you know, it's interference and could you get like, you know, sort of the people going, oh, yay, thank you, no-fly people, maybe. Or you might just get a, you know, look, it's our business, not yours. Get out of here, you know?
I haven't seen these guys advocating for us to get involved.
I have heard a couple of requests from the provisional government in the East. I don't know what they were requesting, but they were requesting some actions. But, you know, it just seems like, look, this is going to play out one way or another. Over the next, it's happening pretty fast, so it'll probably play out over the next week or two, you know. You know, so far it seemed like the rebels have the upper hand over Gaddafi, but he's fighting back and he's not out yet, and the tide may turn on a dime. You know, by the time, yeah, I have a feeling this is also one of those things, by the time we got our act together to actually do anything, the situation is going to have resolved itself anyway, you know. I could be wrong. This could be the start of, you know, an ongoing war that lasts the next 10 years in Libya. I don't know.
It could be. It could be. I mean, for all we know, but I just don't think that we have the, look, we haven't shown that we have really the capability to do.
No. And look, this is one thing that Obama has been sort of doing. I mean, he has been more strongly vocal anti-Gaddafi than he was, you know, against Mubarak or anything else that's been going on. But, you know, that's partly brought on by, you know, how could you not be after some of what Gaddafi's done in the last couple weeks in terms of shooting civilians and such. But for the most part, you know, his approach to things, I mean, we mentioned it last week, you know, the whole wouldn't be prudent thing. Like, it's right. All, you know, he looks at the situation and says, there's dynamic things going on. Let's be very careful about how, when, and what we do. Let's let the situation play out. Let's see what's happening. And, you know, it's been pointed out that, like, one of the patterns that he generally has, not just internationally, but with domestic affairs as well, is he sort of lets everybody else play their hands first before he decides what he wants to do and jumps in, you know. And, you know, that's a very different style. You know, this is not what, you know, George W. would do or what Ronald Reagan would do or any one of these guys who sort of have a, you know, an attitude of, okay, well, let's go in and let's do something. You know, he's sort of like, you know, sometimes the right thing to do is to stand back and wait. And then opportunity may present itself later. And a lot of people have issues with that kind of approach. Sort of the biding your time and waiting and doing nothing. And, you know, it's very easy to say, you know, we got to do something. There's something going on. But, you know, this is not, you know, something where there are a lot of clear options where, you know, we can say that we could go in and decide what we wanted to do and just snap our fingers and make it happen. Yeah, that's just not the situation. It's not usually the situation. And so sometimes just sitting back and seeing what happens may very well be the right thing to do.
It may just be. So, and I'm, you know, I don't see, I mean, honestly, all these people complaining that we haven't done anything, I want them to tell me what the fuck do they think we should be doing. I mean...
Well, and as I've pointed out every time we've talked about this kind of thing, too, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but I'd be willing to bet that even when there is nothing public going on, there is a crap load going on behind the scenes in back channels with and various other things, you know, covert options, whatever, that aren't seeing the light of day. And, you know, I don't know what or where or how we might be doing something, but I don't think that just because the president isn't going on TV banging his fist necessarily means we're not doing anything. However, I would hope that even in such private actions, we're in general still doing the prudence thing and, you know, moving slowly, deliberately, carefully, not jumping in and doing things rashly. I think that's one of the biggest problems we had over the last administration. Was just, yeah, we have to do something and jumping in and doing something that in the end turns out to be very badly thought out. I'll actually admit something ahead of time, that usually I post way after the fact, but at the moment I am actually reading, George W. Bush's memoir. Decision Points. And I've been going kind of slowly through it, but the interesting part is I've just gotten past 9/11, and you see,
okay.
And the part before 9/11, you see it, the whole thing made me remember, like, the whole in 2000, the campaign, the whole compassionate conservative, and he's not going to be like the crazy guy, and even on foreign policy he was arguing non-interventionism, and, you know,
right.
he was talking about compromise and working with the Democrats and blah blah blah, and like the part of the book that was before 9/11, you saw a lot of that, and then after 9/11 he's like, you know, everything changed and now we had to do absolutely everything to keep the country safe and blah blah blah, and, you know, page after page, I'm hearing, like, you know, things where I'm like, you know, if only he'd stepped back and thought and been calmer and blah blah blah. But a lot of it was just rushing headlong into the we've got to do something, and we've got to move quickly, and we've got to fix this, and, you know, and I think that whole approach is, you know, was disastrous, you know, and. I find it, you know, it's a welcome change to have someone who will step back and think a little bit first. Now, I am not at all saying he's making all the right decisions. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of things that I have to complain about Obama with. And, you know, we're not going to talk about him this week. But, like, you know, we've talked before about how he's dealt with Guantanamo and the prisoners. And, you know, this Bradley Manning, the guy who leaked to WikiLeaks, is apparently getting some pretty harsh treatment. You know, and there's a lot of the Bush stuff that he did not roll back. But nonetheless, you know, it is a different sort of mood about it. There's a, you know, someone else made the comment that, you know, comparing Reagan, like Reagan talked in one-liners, and then, oh my God, Obama talks in paragraphs, you know? I don't know. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah.
It's time for another break, and We'll come back talking a little bit about some shenanigans at it was Northwestern University, right? Was that where it was? Okay. We'll be back after this.
Yes.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
And we're back. Okay, so Northwestern University. You know, Carnegie Mellon didn't have classes like this.
Fuck. No, we did not.
So for anyone who didn't hear about this story, it's been going around. Basically, Northwestern University had a human sexuality class. And I guess it was one of these large lecture classes. But they had, this is what you would expect from a human sexuality class. But they had an optional after-class event where they were going to do some demonstrations of some various things. The original intent was, from what I gather, the theme was BSDM bondage kind of stuff that day. I gather the original intent was just, you know, people sort of showing off their equipment and talking about it and, you know, having some conversations about what was going on and what they used the various things for and blah, blah, blah. But apparently at one point they decided that it would be much more effective if they just did a live demonstration. And so, some woman, got naked up in front of the stage or wherever they were. And, her fiance, used a sex toy on her in front of the crowd of students, apparently it was optional. So a lot of students did not attend, but a lot did. And, so basically you had, the live sex act as part of, the class, or I guess it's technically not part of the class, the after class optional activity. And, so then there's been a real furor raised about this. The professor who sort of set this thing up, is getting investigated. There's talk about, how was this appropriate? Should it happen again? Blah, 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 blah. All this kind of stuff. A lot of the attendees were like, hey, it was pretty cool. But a lot of people
honestly,
are like, freaking out.
You know what? I don't have a problem with this. I mean,
consenting adults. This was... Right. Yeah, this was not being done in front of a bunch of elementary school kids. This was not being done in an area, as far as I could tell, where bystanders who weren't knowing what they were getting into were coming by. This was a bunch of people. They were all told and warned that this presentation was going to be explicit and that it was optional and they could leave if they wanted to. The people involved doing the acts were... Again, adults. Completely consensual adults who knew exactly what they were doing. I understand sort of, the trustees or whoever runs the university are potentially getting a lot of flack over, from alumni or whatever who are freaking out and saying this is happening in my school.
That's the reason why something's happening right now, because originally the university was like, dude,
academic freedom.
Get over it. I mean, it wasn't like they went. It wasn't like they went in front of University Center and fucking did it in front of everybody. You know, I'm like, I don't know. It's sex. I mean, give me a fucking break. I mean, they put it on TV. They put it on where it's all over the fucking place. I mean, it's all over the fucking internet. I mean, what the fuck's the difference? I mean, so they did it live in front of them instead of actually through video. Big deal.
Well, I agree with you, but to play devil's advocate, I think that they would say the big deal was that it was organized by the school. or by someone who is acting as a proxy for the school.
What was the subject of the class again? I can't remember what the, it was a class on
human sexuality. I forget the exact words, but it was that kind of thing.
Okay, so let's discuss human sexuality without sex. I mean, what the fuck? Really?
Well, I mean,
if we're talking about it was a math class where a couple of people started fucking in front of everybody, then okay, I can understand that. But it was actually relevant to the topic at hand.
So to say. Yes.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, a lot of people are very squeamish about a lot of things, but, you know, whenever you've got, you know, adults who know what they're doing whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, I guess the school, the fact that the school was doing it, that maybe some people, even though it was optional, felt they had to for the class, or maybe they had a better shot at a good grade if they attended. Okay, maybe those are issues. I mean, like, there is a difference between, you know, like, if these two guys just put out, like, flyers and said, hey, we're going to be doing this. Anybody wants to come watch, come over. That is a little different.
And let me tell you something. Schools sponsor, say, football, for example. Quite a violent sport, okay? We sit around 60,000, 70,000 fucking people watching a whole bunch of kids basically beat the shit out of each other, okay, during like 3 hours. This comes to mind because I was just looking at – there was a news story about a it was related to boxing, but the effects on both sports are similar. It's a story about a boxer in Puerto Rico who was the youngest guy to ever win a title in history, 17 years old, who's 52 years old right now and can't fucking speak, is sitting at home in a fucking wheelchair, okay? His sister having to take care of him broke, okay? You know, so we sponsor and say it's legal to watch people beat the shit out of him in a boxing match, to beat the shit out of him in a fucking college football stadium that is sponsored by the damn university, and somebody go and gives an orgasm to a girl in front of like 100 people, and it's a fucking, you know, it's a fucking brouhaha. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Where's the moral standard there? Why the fuck are we, is it okay for people to beat the crap out of each other in front of 70,000 people, but, you know, it's not okay for somebody to give an orgasm, I don't know, show something about sex. Well, that's what I don't understand.
This is the typical American double standard that, like, if you talk to people in Europe or whatever, they can't understand that, like, violence is completely okay, but, like, everybody freaks out about sex and nudity and that kind of thing.
Right.
And it's like, come on, you know, which would you rather have? Some happy people having sex, or a bunch of people hurting each other, or killing each other.
If a fight broke out in the middle of a fucking class, it wouldn't have made this much controversy.
Indeed. Although, like you said, the parallel is almost the sporting events. Like, you know, because it's not like this suddenly broke out in the middle of class.
Parallel is a sporting event because it's sponsored by the school. We sponsored this as a fucking sport that winds up with people fucking being crippled for the rest of their fucking life, and nobody has a fucking problem with it. And I'm a fan of it, don't get me wrong. I fucking watch it. But still, that is the reality. I mean, it's still a fucking double... it's more than the double standard. It's ridiculous. Then we get offended by one thing like that, but yet the other thing doesn't offend anybody. So, you're gonna better get offended. You better start getting offended by everything then.
So I think Yvonne and I are in agreement. Every school should have live sex classes. It shouldn't even be a one-off thing. It should be like, that should be the class you can sign up for, you know? And, you know.
I'll tell you what, it probably, you know, since, you know, I hear so many people complain, you know, let's put it to you this way. I bet you'd probably make for more enjoyable lives. You know, look, how well prepared are people going out to have sex with their mates? Not very much. You know, I'd say give some techniques, show some approaches, do some stuff. Well, live demos, I bet you they'd probably have a far more enjoyable sex life.
Although I must say that this would probably be more controversial if it was done in a high school sex ed class.
If it were a high school sex ed class, I would understand what the hell the whole thing. These are not adults, okay? You know, I can understand the objections to that. You know, parents want to have control of what their non-adult children are looking at. In a college setting with a whole bunch of adults, I'm like, you know what? Get the fuck over it.
There you go. And that is the show, I think. Unless you got something else to bring up.
I don't know what the heck else we got.
You know,
didn't you have one more? Well, you had one more subject that was of your concern, which we just mentioned. You touched briefly a little bit on it, but you want to talk a little bit about it. We want to take a break and we can cover that, or we could be done.
You know, I think let's be done. Like, there are other All things right, for then. Future weeks. There's Bradford Manning, who is what you're referring to. He was forced to, you know, be stripped naked at night and you know, all kinds of things recently. I think they're sort of hinting that it's an anti-suicide thing, but it's been unclear. Basically, this guy has been held in solitary and all kinds of things have, you know, it seems like way out of proportion to his offense, and just ties back into all of the other mistreatment of prisoners that's been going on. And this is on Obama's watch. The whole thing happened on Obama's watch. There's no blaming this on W. And I think it's going to be an interesting thing to watch. We had also mentioned Newt Gingrich and his presidential stuff. You know, he pretends to be thinking about running for president every 4 years. We'll see what happens this time. You know, and then, you know, you'd mentioned some economics updates and budget stuff, but you know, let's save it for next week. Goodbye, everyone. Have a good week. And, what is it? Email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, with any questions, comments, thoughts, and tell your friends to listen. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.